Yo, this country, man.
Or a woman.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
You know there's only like one lady holding the whole damn thing together, right?
And you think some broken ribs gonna keep her down? Hell no, and hell no.
Ginsburg.
This is for you, RPG.
Ginsburg. Hello, Poll 303. This is Lauren, and welcome to a new episode of Her Voice, Ladies Who Write. This episode will cover an individual with dreams of equal citizenship, someone small and soft-spoken, yet fiercely determined to remove all functional differences between men and women, between those of any culture and any race, as might have been defined by the law during her time. This goal was furthered through her defying of social conventions throughout her entire life, and of course, by leaving behind a legal legacy that will never be forgotten. I use my time today to speak about the notorious RBG, Mrs. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. All right, so I feel super excited. I'm just going to get right into it with an introduction and some background information. So, Ruth Joan Bader was born on March 15th, 1933, in New York City, in the United States. She was a lawyer and jurist and eventually served as an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States from the time she was confirmed in 1993 through 2020. President Bill Clinton nominated her to the Supreme Court, and she was preceded by Justice Byron White. The reasoning for her leaving us at the Supreme Court was due to her unfortunate passing from sickness last year, as we've seen through various media posts and tributes for her. I think that, or I hope that, this episode is just even more proof of how much her legacy will truly live on. I think that she's been honored in many ways, and we've kind of bared witness to all those ways that she's kind of been given tribute for her work and for her grit, really. But I think that all of that just kind of reinforces that RBG is a prime example of how someone's story, and more specifically, how someone's impact lives on and carries on to be something even more impactful, or to really have its way with the way we look at people in society, really, and how we treat each other, whether it be kind of having to do with the fine points of the law or just kind of the way we conduct ourselves ordinarily. Speaking more about what led to her time on the Supreme Court, RBG grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and studied at Cornell University for her undergraduate degree, majoring in government and graduating first in her class. An important part of her time outside of how it was she applied her academic training to her professional career later on actually involved meeting her husband, Martin D. Ginsburg. He was a man that viewed the work of women and men as equal and someone who really believed in the utility of gender equality and just equality in general as it would relate to the law and policy making just as much as she did. And this partnership was an element of Justice Ginsburg's life that strengthened her ability to be the strong woman we saw today and we saw previously throughout her life. I'll speak more on this later, but I think it's important to note that Justice Ginsburg took on a radical approach to advocacy, and part of this approach involved partnerships and personal relationships. After her time at Cornell, Justice Ginsburg and her husband attended Harvard Law School, where she was only one of nine of women in her class, and she was subject to criticism by members of society and also representatives of the university for the space or the alleged space that she took from other male applicants that could have been admitted. During her time at Harvard, Justice Ginsburg took on many roles. She was a student, a mother, and a wife, all of which demanded different things from her. On top of all this, unfortunately, her husband became sick as they both studied, requiring her to complete schoolwork on behalf of them both, all while holding down the household. She later transferred to Columbia Law School, graduating at the top of her class. I want to take a bit of time to speak about the nature of her upbringing, because I feel like as I read out these accomplishments and speak on where Justice Ginsburg has been, it makes me think, and I'm sure that other people feel this way as well, you know, how? What was her inspiration? And I'm sure that this is a question posed to most highly successful people, because we all feel inspired by people like Justice Ginsburg, and we kind of want to know where or who we can get our inspiration from in order to or hope to be as successful as or as impactful as people like Justice Ginsburg. So I want to speak a little bit about her mother, because this was the root of a lot of where her dreams came from, right? The root of all her dreams, at least as it relates to being a successful woman in society. So Justice Ginsburg's mother was an amazing student and someone that just really loved school and learning. And she had pretty big dreams for herself and her future, but those dreams weren't exactly encouraged as a woman in society during that time. And so she eventually, unfortunately, was forced to drop out of school because her family needed her to help put her brother through school. And I think that this misfortune suffered by her mother made her mother much more, or want much more for Justice Ginsburg as a girl growing up. And consequently, her mother's wishes, even after her unfortunate death, were big motivating factors in Justice Ginsburg's life. Justice Ginsburg once said, "I pray that I may be all that she would have been had she lived in an age when women could aspire and achieve, and daughters are cherished as much as sons." And so I think it's important to note that despite the role of gender norms in society and what they had done to her mother's dreams, Justice Ginsburg still made clear that she was redefining these roles and taking after the woman in her household, but in a different, unique way. Another reason why I think this is important is because it ties back to a concept spoken about in class called true womanhood, capital T and capital W, as Professor Kingston would state in lecture. This concept involves a set of values for women within the home, and even more broadly, gender roles as they relate to the family dynamic. By these standards, the quote, true woman, and her way of being would fall within the four cardinal virtues identified by this value set. Those being piety, purity, domesticity, and submissiveness. So this is something that's interesting because during the time, this label was exclusive and left out certain females because of their race or because of the fact that they held a job. And RBG would have been included in females that went against this set of values. In terms of gender roles she took on as a young woman, she was kind of neither, both, and beyond. I think this is important because as we speak about the context of times she was living in, her leading the kind of life she did really went against what the standards were for women, which helped her in her goal to not only start conversations about equality, but also instill in people's minds that equality of genders and of races was something essential to society functioning in a more effective way or in a more efficient way. Next, I want to take a bit of time to speak about the context of era and the location that she was living in, particularly relating to her professional career and her trying to find work. So Justice Ginsburg immensely struggled to find employment as a lawyer because she was a mother and also because she was a woman. No one cared about her credentials, And there was a very small percentage of women working in the legal field at the time. In this way, she kind of instead began to work publishing legal opinions and research, and also teaching at Rutgers School of Law. Through this work, she became a champion of advocating for transforming the nature of gender discrimination litigation, authoring law review articles that largely contributed to Supreme Court decisions on gender discrimination and its related issues. The start of her career, even kind of in the context that she was living in, just kind of shows that even when she was denied access to the courtroom or left out, she still made her way in. Next, I want to highlight some of the awards and honors afforded to or given to Justice Ginsburg. I know that I've spoken to the academic accomplishments that she's made, whether it be through the publishing of her work and that work making its way to kind of broader legal decision making, and also about her success at very prestigious institutions, despite being a woman and despite being a mother. But I'd also just like to highlight three things. The first being that Justice Ginsburg was the second female and the first Jewish female justice of the Supreme Court, receiving of the Liberty Medal. The Liberty Medal is one of the most prestigious awards given to justices. The award, quote, honors men and women of courage and conviction who strive to secure the blessings of liberty to people around the globe. The next is the Ginsburg precedent or rule, and it basically just highlights the idea that we ought to select or consider justices based on their credentials and not their views. So perhaps less formally, an honor afforded to Justice Ginsburg involves what is known as the Ginsburg precedent. It relates to the questioning involving issues before the Supreme Court. The justice opted to provide no information about her views because she insisted she be judged solely on her credentials for a spot on the Supreme Court. So next I want to speak about specific work done by Justice Ginsburg. And the work that I choose to focus on involves her firm views in instances where she did not fall in the majority. More specifically, in the case of Shelby County v. Holder, the dissent written by Justice Ginsburg was very intentional about what the rollback of the 1965 Voting Rights Act and the protections it offered might mean for the future. And so in this case, the Voting Rights Act, an act which prohibited discrimination towards one's right to vote and acted to ensure citizens were not denied the right to vote on the basis of their race or color, the act strikes down any discriminatory criteria or requirements set on voters and was administered in response to specific states that have historically used things like irrational literacy tests or forms of identification to block certain members of a population from voting. In the case, it was argued that parts of the Voting Rights Act were unconstitutional, as discrimination in voting was a thing of the past and that intentional discrimination had disappeared. The Shelby County decision brought about targeted changes in identification requirements almost immediately. So Justice Ginsburg analogizes the majority opinion of the Shelby case in saying, quote, to make this decision, to make the majority's decision, is like throwing away your umbrella in a rainstorm because you are not getting wet. And I think that this analogy really speaks clearly to her opinion of the majority decision, and that being that it's ridiculous, and to disagree with her, at least on this particular legal matter, is ridiculous. And she goes on to say that Congress was of another mind, promoting justified exercises of federal legislative power in our nation's history. And so something really interesting about Justice Ginsburg is she does appeal to precedent and an historical basis as she sees fit in her arguments and in her opinions. And she even goes on to speak about the VRA itself and what it's done for people, but more specifically what it means for the future. And I think that this is really important because we gain some insight in what it is that she's trying to achieve with her legal decisions and with the VRA specifically. So although the VRA wrought dramatic changes in the realizations of minority voting rights, the act to date surely has not eliminated all vestiges of discrimination against the exercise of the franchise by minority citizens. She concludes by saying the sad irony of today's decision lies in its utter failure to grasp why the VRA has proven effective. And so, you know, this provides a lot of insight because it helps us understand that she is not only disagreeing with the majority decision, but she's also suggesting that even the withholding of the VRA is not enough. It's not doing enough for minorities and their respective rights, and that we need more. And so we really get to see or gain some insight on where it is she's going with acts that promote equality in certain areas. She's working to move towards even more equality. And so in thinking about her specific legal opinion and her specific legal thinking, she constructs her arguments carefully and she uses precedent and analogy where possible. And I think it's clear just through the use of her language that she takes very seriously her duty to address her opinion, whether it be, you know, more nuanced or to the center or to the right, to the left. I really don't think that she cares. I think that she just takes her duty as a judge very seriously. And so even if that opinion makes the majority look bad in the eyes of the public, which was the case in this instance, and so I think that there are several tactics used through some of her other work as well, in terms of like taking on specific cases and building personal relationships. But I really do believe that to speak to her dissenting opinions are very much worth some time, just because it's kind of another instance of how Justice Ginsburg demands space and consideration for her kind of otherwise unpopular or even unconventional view of how we ought to define the law. And that being kind of thinking about things as they progress and thinking about not only does this law help individuals that it is aimed to help, but also that it leads us to a path of more help. And so I think that that's really what we can take from this dissenting opinion and how clear it's constructed. I now want to turn to some of the major themes of both Justice Ginsburg's professional career and her work, whether it be in publishing or in representing clients or her work on the bench. And I believe that there are two major themes that I personally just think have manifested into her way of being. And then there are three other themes that I think directly relate to what we speak about in the course and what we see with other thinkers that we've studied. And so the first theme that I think is really important involves Justice Ginsburg's taking up of space and the intergenerational aspects of how she inspires young women today and yesterday and years ago. And so, spoken to earlier, though a rather tiny woman, Justice Ginsburg has a voice that demands to be heard. She encountered several barriers throughout her life that were directly related to her gender and her identity, things that have little to no impact on her credentials as a legal professional, and yet she still managed to make it into the courtroom every time. The theme of taking up space, just as most men often do, is very evident when it comes to Justice Ginsburg and her accomplishments and the way she goes about making those accomplishments. And, you know, I think it's amazing that Justice Ginsburg is, you know, a hero for young women like myself today, but also was equally as iconic and equally as inspiring to women, you know, years ago in the 1970s or the 1980s, or I guess most particularly in the 1990s, when she was, you know, one of the first women on the Supreme Court. And so I really don't want that to go unnoticed. I'm sure it doesn't, but I do think that it's such a major theme in her life to just absolutely demand space and to be heard. And so the next has specifically to do with just the way she goes about making decisions. Typically when justices are nominated and confirmed, there are kind of opinions about where they sway in terms of their opinion. And at least early on, I believe that another theme involves her challenging the notion of viewing justices as holding kind of left or right views, right? She did start her precedent involving the fact that she didn't want to express those views publicly, and that she was very, very intentional about her job and what it meant to be a judge in terms of interpreting the law on a case-by-case analysis and thinking to the fine points of the law that relate to specific cases. And she was never completely consistent with the spirit of kind of the spectrum-based categorization of the left or right, at least at first. And she would always look to things based on the specific cases that they pertain to. And so moving on to kind of the specific themes of the course, the first theme that I think is echoed via RBG's work involves the nature of power and governance. And so I think a famous quote by RBG involves the political power held by women, and an interviewer, or maybe even just a quote herself, saying, you know, people often ask me how many women until there is enough on the Supreme Court. And I always go on to say there will be enough when there are nine. And so for anyone unfamiliar with the Supreme Court, there are only nine justices that serve. So Justice Ginsburg, you know, vehemently, viciously fought for equal citizenship. And she firmly believed that, you know, women ought to maintain dignity and autonomy in order to realize their full potential. So she was very intentional about removing, quote, ancient notions about women's place in the family and under the Constitution, ideas that have been long since discredited. And she wish to always promote greater power to women in any occupation. And so I think that this quote really highlights the theme of a lot of her work, engaging with promoting power for women and the idea that that would create for equality in society. And so the next theme that I wish to speak about involves the unique form of her approach, her legal thinking, but also the way she presented that legal thinking. And so Justice Ginsburg's clients, ironically, were mostly men. And she ought to have known that showing how gender norms, or I guess more importantly, laws which promoted those norms, hurt men just as much as they hurt women. And so, you know, going back to my previous thought, she ought to have known that showing how these laws hurt men would appeal to the nine men on the bench at the time. And I think that she used this approach to promote equality, not only for men, but also kind of her further agenda of women's rights. And so she also used historical significance in several instances to promote a more progressive approach in terms of treating everyone equally. This particular tactic was associated with the word pathmaking, which she was very fond of. And, you know, spoken to previously with the case of the VRA, she, even through her dissenting opinion, we were able to again see how she was aiming towards that more pathmaking approach, where it was, you know, not only does the VRA not provide enough for minority rights, but we need more. And so she would always push the notion of this is making the path for greater and more achievement in this area. And so this kind of all really comes together and goes to show that she was always very crafty with her approach. And she knew that she had to be aggressive, but also almost backwards in her approach in order to obtain her ultimate goal. And so lastly, but certainly not least, I just want to highlight that she kind of would always, in terms of women specifically, but also in terms of minority groups, she would reflect on the status of their rights and of the power that they hold. And as I just mentioned, kind of speaking to the historical importance, RBG constantly spoke to the history of women, the mistreatment afforded to them in some cases, and the effects that it has on them realizing their full potential. She once said, "I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks." And she would say these kind of things because, as I mentioned, in going through her background and her upbringing, it was personal to her. And she believed aggressively in equality. And she was an extremely selfless woman, and she wanted everyone to have equal opportunity. And this is reflected in her own story and the way she went about her own life. And she chose to devote the rest of her life to ensure that everyone had that same opportunity, just as she did. I want to conclude with my personal opinion of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And that's just that she was absolutely brilliant. And I think that my reasoning for this might not be as common. I think as a woman looking to build a professional career, she was very strategic in how she went about making this possible for herself from the beginning. She saw what happened when young women became or are forced to become too agreeable through the tragedy of her mother, and knew that she had to change this fate in her honor. She formed friendships and partnerships with powerful men and used her charm and wit to ultimately win them over, and later used these friendships and partnerships to her advantage. She obtained employment in publishing and teaching in order to ensure her opinions were heard, and this is how she got into the courtroom without even being in the courtroom. When she actually physically got in, she knew that the disadvantages felt by women stemming from gender roles set by society were not gaining traction. So she opted to show primarily men the disadvantages felt by men using these same norms. Her clients were primarily men, as mentioned previously, and with this, she won cases and constantly challenged the standards set for how we ought to or what we ought to think about on the basis of sex, or on the basis of any identity category for that matter. And even when she wasn't holding the majority opinion, her dissenting opinion was more known and more appreciated. She was a pioneering advocate for women's rights and can never be replaced, but only honored in the best ways possible. So I'd like to end by trying to motivate this unique view of mine. And I understand that there are many reasons that would hold a lot of weight in justifying RBG as brilliant, but I believe her understanding of the reality that she was matched with, and consequently her manipulating that reality to fit her dreams and desires, is truly what makes her this brilliant person. It is being said, and I certainly agree, that there is a different vocabulary for men and women in specific industries. I've been very intentional about how I describe RBG. She was strategic, not calculated. She reacted and wasn't only always overreacting. I urge all of us to leave with RBG's thinking involving believing you can turn any reality into one that suits your aspirations, no matter what language or role you've been given by others. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and have the best day.